Pope is the thing with feathers.
Pope is the thing with feathers.
That's like a bird.
Like a bird.
That perches in the soul.
That perches in the soul. Welcome to the Thing with Feathers podcast, a podcast about birds and hope. I'm your host, birding enthusiast, Courtney Ellis. Welcome back to the Thing with Feathers podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Ellis. With us today is Josina Guess. She is a writer, a farmer, a poet, an editor, and a community builder based in Comer, Georgia. She writes at the intersections of ecology, race, history, and faith. And I hear she's got a really good vulture story for us. Welcome, Josina.
Thanks. Great to be here, Courtney. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do down there in Georgia.
Well, you did a nice little summary of all the various hats I wear. I moved down here to Georgia in 2011 to work for a Christian community called Jubilee Partners, which has been around since the late 1970s. It's a Christian hospitality community for refugee families. And my husband and I moved there from Philadelphia with our four kids, and we worked there for 6.5 years, and then we got the farm where we live now and moved over here and moved about a mile away from Jubilee. That's kind of how I went from Philadelphia to rural Georgia. But we'd always kind of thought we might live in a rural place. And so then we stayed close by, and we have a 4-acre property that's got lots of animals and, both the animals we care for and the animals that happen to pass through and call this place home, and lots of history, human history here as well. And I work, you know, I'm an editor for Sojourners Magazine and also a writer. So I wear different hats, and I think I got connected with you through Shamaya, who had read my vulture essay, who I met up with her in Seattle because I was there for this essay has kind of taken wings on its own as part of a project called Vulture Sister Song, which is like a dance and poetry and storytelling collaboration that includes some of my own work and work of the other collaborators. And so we did that in Seattle, and we'll be doing some shows in this summer and fall in New England. So that was a very long-winded answer to to who I am and what I do. Yeah.
But a very good one. I think you must have more hours in your day than the rest of us.
No, and there's lots of loose ends, lots of unfinished things. So, yeah.
I was so grateful. It was Shamaya Gonzalez, who was a previous guest on The Thing with Feathers, that put us in touch, and she put me in touch with your beautiful essay about vultures. Will you tell us a little bit, for those who haven't read it, and I will link to it in the show notes, it's well worth a read. It's an image journal, which, for those of you who know image, is just such a beautiful repository of poetry and stories and images, and it's well worth knowing if you don't know it. But tell us your vulture story.
Sure. And also, I want to clarify, it was for Good Letters, which is the blog of Image Journal. So it was not in the journal itself, but it had been solicited by one of the editors for their online blog. And I'm very proud of that essay. It came from deep observation, both of the animals around me and of the history of Georgia. So in a nutshell, it was just about how there's an old barn on our property that vultures had been nesting in when we moved there. And the very first time I visited this place, or soon, I don't know if it was the very first time, but I had we had friends that were renting this house before we bought it. And they, I was taking a walk and saw this fuzzy little vulture chick on the ground. It was like, looked like a little lamb. I mean, it was this weird, you know, soft, fuzzy thing, but not quite a lamb because it was a hissing vulture chick. But it, it kind of surprised me. And then I realized, you know, there was that vultures nest and return to the same place, you know, year after year. And so I'm not going to tell the whole essay because I do want people to read it, but it's sort of about observing these animals close by, and then also just digging into, some of the harder and more painful parts of Georgia history, particularly the fact of so many African-American graveyards being, not just Georgia history, American history, So there's a graveyard near our property that had been bulldozed before sometime in the 20th century. We're not quite sure when, but just knowing that graveyards were just erased from the map is a horrible thing. And but yeah, I'm rambling. Hold on. Anyway, and so just thinking about the vultures as like, I saw them as kind of like sentinels or keepers of the place and keepers of memory, and just connecting with some African-American folklore around vultures. And yeah, I kind of wove it all into an essay. So I hope y'all will read it. And that's why I write and don't always, I mean, I like to talk, but I think sometimes it's nice to just sit quietly and compose an essay, because sometimes I feel like I ramble when I talk.
I love that part about writing, that no one sees that first draft. My first drafts are all over the place. And by the end, it's like, oh, you're such a linear thinker. And I'm like, no, no, this is revision. I love vultures. I call myself a vulture apologist, because people call them creepy and people call them, you know, lots of things, but they do such good work in the world, such important work in the animal kingdom. Yeah. And one of the things I'm working on as a writer are my introductions. How do you get a really, really gripping introduction? And I love how this story starts. And I think any birder who reads this story will be clutching their pearls at the introduction to this essay. Are you willing to share with us how you begin the story?
Yeah. I mean, I begin with my husband saying, I'm going to shoot them because a vulture had just pooped on him, which is pretty nasty. If you're not familiar with vulture poop, it is not tidy. It is, but it's also full of, if you're familiar with it, you know, it's full of really great antibacterial stuff that helps to stop the spread of disease and clean up the environment. That's the amazing thing. Vultures don't spread disease. They actually help stop it. So of course my husband was upset that he had vulture poop on him, and I felt some, you know, a little bit of sympathy for him, but not to the extent that I would think he would want to kill our neighbor, which is a bird. And I know it's what many people do, even though it's not, I think it's illegal, and it's also unwise. So I start with that scene of tension in which I sided with the vulture. And of course, my husband is, just to give him some credit, he's not the kind of person who actually, like, he was not actually going to go get a gun and shoot it. But he felt like it at the moment. So that's how it starts. Yeah. But, and then I go into sharing how I like sharing space with vultures and watching them and learning from them. So, yeah.
And I love that it does come out in the essay that your husband is not the kind of person who would actually do this. But that gut reaction of, you know, those of us who bird a lot, we get pooped on. And there are certain birds that, like, no big deal, flick it off your shoulder. And then there are other birds like, this is a change of clothes situation. This is a shower situation. This is significant, you know, seabirds and shorebirds and vultures. And so I loved it. I was drawn in from the very first line. So again, we'll link to it in the show notes, but give the essay a read. It's really beautiful. And from out of this beautiful essay came the vulture sister song. This pooping vulture birthed this beautiful thing. Will you tell us a little bit about vulture sister song? What is it, and what does it do?
Sure. And also, I will say that it's definitely like a creative collaboration that I got invited into, having already written about vultures a little bit. I have a neighbor who's a storyteller and musician who's friends with some dancers. One is based in New Hampshire, the other is based in Seattle. Their names are Ellen Ahern and Kate Elias. So my neighbor is Pete Dibdahl. And then Kate's brother, Jacob, is a musician and also a violin maker and woodworker. So the five of us kind of met over Zoom. They had, Kate and Ellen had started making a dance about interspecies communication and interspecies, figuring out what makes us human and what makes something an other, and or what makes a person an other, or, you know, just sort of like exploring these lines between self and other and human and other species. And so something that did not end up in the essay that I still need to write an essay about is that my son Malachi is a, you know, is an my kid. So he looks at things and observes stuff. And he was observing some nesting vultures. And he decided to snatch some vulture eggs out of an abandoned space and bring them home. And he told that story about the vulture eggs to my neighbor, Pete, who then told it to Ellen and Kate. And so I really have to credit my son, Malachi, for his vulture egg thievery, which I think is also a crime, but it's been several years. Let's hope it's okay.
Hopefully he was a minor. We won't record him.
So that story, which I'm, you know, is something that's revealed in the performance, was what led Pete to tell that story to Kate and Ellen, who then started thinking about calling the piece Vulture Sister Song. And then I got in conversation with them and wrote a little poem about it. And it's one of those things, it's still hard to explain because it's something that is poetry and dance and folk music and moving illuminated lanterns. We've done it in like art gallery spaces, but also in Grange halls. I think it's sort of like trying to take modern dance and make it less esoteric and a little bit more accessible, but it's still a little bit esoteric by its nature. But I love that our shows are multi-generational and kids really like it and connect with it. And one kid who saw it at our most recent show was talking to their parent about it. And they were like, remember when we went to Kate and Ellen's wedding? And the mom was like, what? So the kid thought that the whole show was a wedding, which, I mean, if people got married this way, that would be really, really something. So it's sort of like this dream space of imagination and connection. And it's not a wedding, but it's definitely not like any performance I've been a part of in the past. We met in person. So they started it over Zoom during the pandemic, and then they had known each other for years, the two dancers, and then and we all kind of came together in the fall in Ithaca for like a week, and then we had another residency in Vermont for about a week, and then did our first performance. And each performance that kind of grew and evolved and got a little stronger. And then we did a couple of shows in New Hampshire and Massachusetts last year. And then we did this one in Seattle. And then we've got one in Maine in July, and in Vermont in July, and then Boston in October, and then hopefully back in Georgia in a year from now. So it'll come home and then I think it'll be done. It's one of those shows that like, it's not going to go on forever, but it's been really fun to see how these, and each time we collaborate with like local environmental bird, like there's been bird sanctuaries or people that know about vultures or people that have been studying vultures, other local artists or scientists have been part of this evolving zine that we have, which is a little companion to the show, as well as the actual events that we've hosted. There's been the performance, but then there's also been like some collaboration with art and nature and science people, which I think is also really fun to bring those things together. So
it's one of the things I love most about hosting this podcast is I think we learn different things about birds when we approach them from different perspectives. So ornithologists know so much about birds, but poets know different things about birds, and mm-hmm. dancers know different things about birds, and children know different things about birds. So mm-hmm. I love this idea and this collaboration, and I wish I was hanging out in Maine. Maybe I got to make a pilgrimage. But what a beautiful thing, and what a beautiful thing to continue to craft it and to do that together, mm-hmm. To be brought together over a beautiful bird and a beautiful story in all these different fields. So often we bifurcate our creative endeavors, and it's just poetry and it's just in a book, or it's just dance and it's just on a stage. And that's not life. That's beautiful. What a cool thing. Yeah. So I asked this question of all my podcast guests, and I think I know the answer, but you might surprise me. Josina, what is your favorite bird?
You know, it's funny, you'd think I would say vulture just because, you know, I did the essay, but probably it's probably an owl or a kind of owl. Like, I'm not sure if it's a particular kind of owl, but just like, I just love how quietly they fly, like how you just don't even hear them. And then there they are, or that they can just be sitting there the times when I've seen an owl, or like one time I saw some owlets when I was walking with my mom in the woods when I was like probably, you know, 19 or 20. Like, I can't remember, but I just remember that moment of seeing this tree stump and then noticing there were two baby owls on the tree stump, like in a path that we walk all the time. And then like they were so much part of that stump that was always there. And suddenly it's blinking and there they are staring at us, you know? And so I just love them. And I just love watching them. It's like I could go on. I guess the question is, which is my favorite? I have a really hard time with favorites. I don't like playing favorites. I like to love everything and everybody. So, but I would say that, yeah, I think owls are still my favorite over vultures, but I also really love vultures and I love hummingbirds. You know, I just any kind of bird. Yeah. I mean, like even pigeons, you know what I mean? Like I really do. Like, I just like birds, and I come from a family, like my Aunt Mamie was a bird watcher who like probably would have, you know, if not for sexism, probably would have been way more of a professional bird watcher in her generation. But she, I think she did some work with the Cornell lab. Like she may have done some work for them, but I can't remember exactly what was, but I just know that she kept a regular, column that she wrote for her local paper called Birds in Your Air. And she would write weekly about the birds in Barnesville, Ohio, where she lived, and just keep and helped her neighbors who lived in Barnesville to just be aware of the birds. Every week she just kept this column, and her pen name was Phoebe. So we named our daughter Phoebe after my Aunt Mamie, who also, you know, Phoebe is a bird as well for people that don't know birds. Yeah, so I think I just have a thing for birds in general. Yeah.
I respect that. It's almost an unfair question. I have bird lovers come on the show and ask their favorite. Next question, Josina, which is your favorite child?
Right? No, can't do it.
Nope, not going to do it. And sometimes I think, you know, it's your favorite bird today, or it's your favorite bird this moment. And sometimes right. It's the bird that's right in front of you, or the one that really captured your imagination as a child. Like, I can see those owls blinking on that stump. I can picture that.
Yeah.
And what a great legacy with your aunt. Are those columns still out there? Are those findable?
You know, it's funny. I bet that somewhere in my parents' stuff, there's probably clippings of them. I don't know if the Barnesville Enterprise has been digitized. That's something I could look up. But I know that they've been held. And I have her writing desk in my bedroom, which is...
Oh, how cool.
Yeah. And and I would say that there's this poem that my granddaddy, who was a dairy farmer, would recited to my mom, which she recited to me. So I will say that I'm glad. Well, I'll tell you the poem, and then I won't give away the punchline. But it goes, "As I looked up into the sky, a bird dropped whitewash in my eye. Oh, me, oh, my, how glad I am that cows don't fly."
Yes. So nailed it.
Yeah. I'm glad that cows are not birds. I'll say that.
So. There's a lot of mercy in this world when you start to look for it. There's a lot of grace. So Josina, you work for Sojourners and you work at these intersections of, you know, ecology and race and history and faith. And Sojourners is known for tackling really hard topics, controversial topics sometimes, and saying, you know, we're gonna look at this through the lens of faith. And even though it's controversial, even though it's difficult. So this is a show about birds, but our tagline is birds and hope. And so you're doing some heavy lifting. You're doing some difficult work. You're sitting at some intersections that especially these days make people mad and get people's hackles raised. And where are you finding hope in the midst of all that you're carrying and all that you're holding?
Well, I mean, I think I really do find hope in like the moments, which might seem like, I don't want to feel Pollyanna-ish, but I think that it's like, yes, our world is burning. I mean, climate change is terrifying. And the fact that like, it is only getting worse. At the same time, like the thing that brought me the most joy this weekend was working in the garden with my husband and like planting and pruning and mulching and using and just being in this really beautiful space. And I think that like, honestly, like tending these beautiful spaces is a form of resistance against climate change. We all make choices in life. And I think I find joy in, you know, finding the eggs that our chickens have laid in the places that are never the places we expect them to be laid. I mean, chickens are the darndest birds. I'll tell you that. Chickens are funny birds and they're annoying birds and I love them, but they're just a different kind of bird. And they, but just knowing chickens, brings me joy and hope more than like knowing that we are part of this industrial food complex that reduces chickens to machines, you know, like the farm down the road approaches chickens very differently than the farm in our backyard. And I'm not trying to like, you know, be directly at odds with the whole meat industry, but I can at least think about how I interact with the chickens in my life. And I think if we can apply that really, I mean, like at the granular level, and the wider level, I really do think it matters. Like we have to have hope that we can love our neighbors. And that starts with every species and every human. And like, if we really embody that, like if we really hope and believe that even when it's hard, we can keep loving one another, seems better than not, you know, like what's the alternative? So I'm going to keep on believing that it's possible. And even when it doesn't feel possible, that's where, you know, prayer and faith come in and say, okay, it feels impossible to have hope right now, but trusting that that maybe another person does, and I can see that hope and be encouraged, you know. So, yeah.
I love picturing you in the garden. What's growing in the garden right now?
Well, I was focusing on the flowers, which is really fun. So we've got some lots of so the people that lived here before us had like lots of antique varieties of old rose bushes and irises that are just so pretty. And they've got lots of thorns. Like the old ones are really fragrant and really thorny, but the newer ones, it's harder to find. So we have like these beautiful roses and there's this thing called a rattlesnake master, which is coming up, and it's this neat old, it's like some sort of pollinator that looks really cool. I can't wait. I just planted it last year and it survived the winter, and some echinacea and daisies that wintered over. So I'm excited to see them taking over. And it was fun. Like I have a neighbor who is interested in gardening and wants to try it. And like, so yesterday I just spent a lot of time like digging up lots of lilies and chunks and hunks of this and that, and filled her car with stuff so she can plop them in the ground. And yeah. And that was also really fun because like, you know, when you separate plants, they actually do better. And so it's like a fun thing like to just like, you know, tell everybody I know, like, don't buy your plants at Lowe's, like just dig them up and share them and your garden will look better and your neighbor's garden. I mean, I think it's, again, it's that whole sense of like, we don't actually need to be buying these things. And one piece that I edited recently, which was really hopeful, was by Annalise Jolie. She wrote a piece about Catholics planting Mary gardens using native species. And it was just really fun working on that story and thinking about gardeners just like digging up their lawns and planting more and more native species for pollination and for, you know, the health and beauty of the planet and a way to bring glory to God. Like, I don't know, it just was very nice to offer that, as well as the reality that if we don't do something serious about climate change beyond our own gardens, you know, then we got to do both. It's like, it's not like that. There's got to be also like big business has to be held accountable, and people need to like be aware that you can do both, you know? So, yeah.
It feels to me like when you face down the problem and it becomes so overwhelming, there's this reminder that it does have to start locally. It starts in your own garden and then it blossoms out from there, but then it also returns there. This is the place that grounds us, that ultimately all activism is local. Mm-hmm. No matter how far it spreads, it matters that, you know, these antique roses in your garden are bringing you life and are giving you joy, which is one of the best forms of energy we have to do the work that God has set before us. We can't all just be in despair all the time.
Right.
Tempting as it might be. You know, we were facing some anxiety. I'm a pastor, and we were facing some anxiety within our church with the upcoming election and things. And so my solution to that was, well, I'm going to start a podcast that talks about hope. And I'm like, what am I doing? You know, who is this helping? How is this going to fix the problem? But I think as creatives, as artists, as ornithologists, you know, whatever your niche is, pressing into that faithfully is the start. And that's the return. And I think the lie of despair is it will never be enough, so give up.
Right.
And we've got to fight that by going out to the garden again.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, and the lie of despair is paralysis. Like, it makes you just be paralyzed, which, and just like held by fear, which doesn't help you. It doesn't help anyone. And so learning how to, like, you know, actually not let your life force be thwarted by all the things that would want to thwart your life force, you know?
And accepting what is ours to hold on a given day, on a given hour, and what isn't. There was a meme going around yesterday that said, you know, I can't sleep, so let me look at the most terrible things in the world on my phone at 3 a.m. Oh, that'll help, you know? And I think we're not designed to try to hold the problems of the entire world. So what is it that's been given to us in this season? And I love, in perusing your work, just seeing the ways that you've been faithful with the different pieces that have been handed to you, disparate as they are, in these creative and beautiful ways. And sometimes it's a poem, and sometimes it's an essay, and sometimes it's things that aren't seen online that I know nothing about, because you're raising these four children and you're cultivating these roses and your poor husband's getting pooped on in a barn. And it's all part of it, right? It's all part of it. What's going on at Sojourners these days? What are you excited about over there?
Well, I was just thinking about our forthcoming issue. Like, one of the things I get to do for the print magazine is curate this page called Prelude, which is just, you know, selecting a short prayer or a short piece of writing that can kind of set the tone for the magazine. And sometimes I stress out about it and I'll be like, what am I going to do for Prelude? And, but the one that's coming up, I think it'll be, I think it's fine for me to talk about it, because it's, I think it's already in people's mailboxes soon. We always do like our June issue comes out in May. So it'll be coming out, but it's by Cole Arthur Riley, who wrote Black Liturgies. And we were able to use this one thing she wrote for those who doom scroll, which made me think of what you were just talking about. And it's just a beautiful prayer for those who doom scroll. And I just love, like, not only like, yeah, like to be able to sit with someone else's work and be like, ooh, I really think all of our readers need this prayer. And mostly I just say, I think I need this prayer. I hope it helps everyone else. So there's something like that feels kind of pastoral in tending that, that page of the magazine. And I'm excited that that can be something people can sit with and maybe like cut out and paste in their journal, or like just even just working in print feels sometimes like, why do we work in print in this digital world? But I think there's something nice about creating something that someone can hold and take those words and think about, reminding themselves to not be looking at a screen, but to be thinking about how to look at the darkness in the world and not be overcome by it. So so that's one thing I'm pretty excited about. I don't really, my mind is just going blank. I don't know what else to say.
No, that's great. We'll link to Sojourners in the show notes as well, so people can find it if you're not familiar. Yeah. It does a really good job of weaving together some of these things, poems and prayers, but also articles on current issues facing the church and current issues out in the world. And I really appreciate that Sojourners is out there and the work that you do. It tells a good story, and it points us toward hope, though sometimes, you know, we struggle to see where hope is coming from. Sojourners, it tackles hard topics, but it doesn't leave a reader in despair. And I think that is a needle to thread. Yeah. I really appreciate that it's a magazine with such a long and storied history, and that it's been doing this for some time. It's not new on the scene. And I think you're right about the paper magazine, that there is such a farther distance between me reading something on paper, whether it's a magazine or a book or a journal, whatever it is, and getting to my phone versus reading that article on my phone, where suddenly every notification has interrupted me. It just, my husband and I are becoming Luddites that way. One of our goals at night is that we would be reading something on paper. Doesn't matter what it is, could be a menu, but something that's not digital, to kind of close down that infinite portal to the abyss and be present with whatever it is. His is usually The Economist. I cannot get into The Economist. I need a little more whimsy than The Economist.
Maybe if the goal is to fall asleep, then, you know, I mean, not to say I've actually read some good articles in The Economist. I don't want to, I'm just saying, like,
It's very thick. It's very thick. My stands usually the New Yorker. You know, we each have our own thing. So, yeah. Well, Josina, as we're headed into spring and the garden is starting to blossom and, you know, I don't know how old your kids are, but we are on the cusp of summer vacation, which I always enjoy and dread a little bit as a working mom. It's like, how are we going to balance all this? Mm-hmm. What are you looking forward to? What's on your plate that's lighting you up?
Yeah, well, I'm excited about, honestly, like I was just telling my husband last night that like, I just love being home. Like, I just love it. I mean, I've been doing a lot of travel. We went to Texas to see the eclipse, in April, which was amazing. And, you know, but it was like, I am just so excited about not traveling in June. And so I'm looking forward to that and to just, putting in, because Jubilee, where we used to live, has a huge garden and some of the things we need to put in the ground right now are plants that they had too many of to plant. So we've got to plant our sweet potatoes and our tomatoes and eggplants and kale that we all just got that I'm looking forward to the garden getting rooted and established. And honestly, like with the kids not going to school, then like I can have that early morning time to like write. I actually have not been writing. So I'm actually I think I do more writing when the kids are out of school because I let them sleep in and then I can still wake. I mean, in theory, right? I can still wake up at 6 on a good day and write for that time that I would have been getting them out the door and then start my work day at 9. But like those 3 hours, I'm really excited to like be writing and working in the garden and just kind of doing stuff that doesn't require much except just being where I am and focusing. And then in July, I mentioned, you know, going up to New England and my sister lives in Maine. So I'll tack on a trip from there, I'll stay there and she's in mid-coast Maine, which is so beautiful. I just can't wait. So my daughter, Serafina, will be with me and we'll I'm not sure what we'll do, but like my sister and I will both work, but then our kids will play with each other and then we'll go and do some adventures. So that should be fun. And then, in Georgia, school starts back in August. So it's like, it's kind of crazy. Like the summer will be like June and July and then bam, back to work. But yeah, I'm excited about the things I've got going on. And trying to think. And it's funny, I named like all three of my kids. So I'm also going to name my daughter Zora. I love all four of my kids. And so I'm excited they're all older. They're like 14, 16, 19, and 21. So it's fun to, you know, the whole like bird analogy about the empty nest, you know, like my nest is shifting and they're growing their wings and fledging and stuff like that. So that's been fun to kind of think about what our nest is becoming and what it is. And just we're part of, there's this community organization called The Perch, which I'm on the board of. Comer. And again, like, I'm like, oh yeah, The Perch, of course, because I didn't name it, but my friends who I co-organized it with, you know, but it's basically just a place for people to gather. And our friends just built a huge stage there and we did a little Earth Day celebration and we'll do a celebration for Juneteenth and just planning more ways for people to gather in just a place. Literally like that image of a perch where birds come, they sit there, they fly away. They come that you can have a container that holds people loosely, maybe just for a season, but yeah, a place for people to gather that I'm excited to be like nurturing that and thinking about fun activities to do there. There's a camp that, that The Perch is hosting. I mean, I just got to direct. I directed it last summer. I'm not directing it this year. I do not actually do everything. I'm so thankful to have a new camp director. And so I'm excited, you know, to see what that camp, it's called Movers and Makers. And the kids will be doing fun things, learning about social movements and people making beautiful things. And yeah, kind of that idea of like, how can we be moving and making in our world? And so I'm really excited that the camp is continuing this year and that we have a good new director and that the kids will have fun. And so that's, and when I say the kids, I mean like local, you know, the kids that live in Comer, which includes, because of where Jubilee, you know, worked with refugee families. There's a lot of families from Burma who live in our area. And so there's a lot of, so our camp, has a really wonderful mix of kids from around the world. So I'm excited. Mm. So.
Well, Shosina, thank you for filling us in on your life and your work. If folks are looking for you, they want to find you, they want to read more, where can they do that?
Well, I guess they could go to josinaguest.com. And also I'm on Instagram, and I still have an account on the thing called X, although, you know,
we don't call it that. We're birders. It's Twitter forever.
Well, yeah. And, you know, so speaking of my, I talked about my grandfather in that silly little poem, like the week before my grandparents got married, there was this letter that my, my cousin found that my grandparents wrote to one another, where the whole letter just said, tweet, 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 like, and I can't remember, I don't want to misquote who just wrote tweet for the entire letter, but like, they were just so over the moon in love with each other that all they could write was tweet the week before their wedding. And I just think, you know, we can tweet to one another in letters and it doesn't have to be on. And it was the cutest thing ever. So
I love that. Your history is just studded with birds. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. I love that. All right. Well, I will link to your website and your social media in the show notes. Everyone go find Josina. She's doing beautiful things in the world. And maybe you don't live anywhere near her in Georgia, but it might inspire you to start something similar, to dream big, or to walk out in the barn, but wear a rain slicker because the vultures are above you.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Thanks so much for giving me a chance to talk about these lovely things. Appreciate. I think it's a good thing that you're doing a podcast on hope, because we sure don't need anything on despair.
That's next season. Next season, it's birds and despair all the way. Well, thank you for the gift of your time and your wisdom, Josina.
All right. Thanks, Courtney. Take care. Bye.
The Thing with Feathers is produced by me, Courtney Ellis. Many thanks to Del Belcher for the music, to Todd Peterson for the name inspiration, and to Emily Dickinson for the beautiful poem and for being in the public domain. Until next time, my friends, keep looking up.
What is it going on your soul?
Yes, it does.